time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, this is Lee Bockham. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast. This is the podcast designed to help you thrive no matter where you are in your life. Now, I've got to admit to you, while I am a full-time Thriveologist, which means I spend all of my professional life learning how to thrive and teaching people how to thrive, that doesn't mean that I'm a full-time thriver. Sometimes I need to learn how to thrive better. And today I want to talk about some thoughts I think we all need to drop. There are three thoughts that I think really get in our way, and they kind of keep us stuck. In fact, what you'll notice is all three of them are really excuses for us to be stuck. And so I think it's useful for us, and even a reminder for myself, to drop those thoughts. And the first one is, I'm not good enough. How many times have you told yourself, I'm not good enough? Whatever it is, maybe it's right before you're getting ready for a promotion, or maybe right before that baby comes into your life and you go, gosh, I'm not ready to be a parent. I'm not good enough for that. Or right before you start a relationship, saying, you know, am I the right person to be in a relationship now? Am I good enough? And we all have those places where we ask the question. And so what I want to say is that it's not about whether that question pops in your head or whether that statement, I'm not good enough, that belief pops in your head. It's whether you let it linger or not. It's going to pop into your head. The question is whether you entertain it, whether you give it a lot of power and a lot of steam, or whether you let it drop away. And that really is the key to this. We don't have a lot of control over what thoughts pop into our head. That's just what our mind does. We do have a choice on whether we're going to pursue that thought, whether we're going to grab that thought and hold on to that thought and nurture that thought and entertain that thought until it becomes a huge part of our lives. And many people find themselves completely wrapped up in the belief, I'm not good enough. Now, let me be clear. This is something we tell ourselves so we don't have to improve. We don't have to change. We don't have to grow. Oddly enough, you know, it's kind of like saying, I'm not good enough. Oh, well, I might as well walk away rather than saying, I'm not good enough. What do I do to get better? And so if you find yourself saying that, just recognize that that's a very common place. And what it represents is what Carol Dweck called the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. Now, a growth mindset is when you believe that you can get better at things, you can improve yourself, you can grow, you can change, that there are not these innate qualities, which is the hallmark of a fixed mindset. A fixed mindset is you believe you can't get better, that, you know, you're either a natural athlete or you're not, you're a natural writer or you're not, you're natural at math or you're not, you're natural at something or you're not. And the problem with that is twofold. One is that when we believe we're supposed to be a natural at something, if you believe you are a natural at something, then it's hard to improve because you believe that anytime you work to improve, anytime you practice, all you're doing is proving that maybe it wasn't quite so natural. The other is that it also allows us to say, well, I'm just not going to even work on this. I'm not going to even apply because it's just not in me. And then there is the growth mindset. And the growth mindset is when you're focused on how you can grow and change. So that's that growth mindset of being able to say, you know what, I can improve. Now, you know, it doesn't mean you can become anything you want to be. You can't become an NBA basketball player when you're my age, right? Now that I'm nearing close to 50, it's a little late for me to do that. And probably I don't even have some abilities within me that even if I worked at, I could do. But if I wanted to be better at basketball, I could learn. I could get better at it. I could improve. The same has been true over the time. You know, I never thought I was a runner. Now, I run and I watch my times improve. I watch my abilities improve because I work at it. And that's the place of that growth mindset. Now, let me just say that this little thought is not the same as I'm good enough for anything. That's not the opposite of what I'm saying. You know, I'm not saying you go from saying I'm not good enough to saying, well, I'm good enough to do anything. That's megalomania. That's the belief that anything is within your reach without even working at it. This is being able to say, I'm not going to hold on to that belief of I'm not good enough. I'm going to work on what I can improve. I'm going to work on what I have control over. And so we do a true analysis of who we are in this process. A true analysis is saying, what parts of me are good enough? Maybe you look at a new job and you say, what parts do I already have? And then what parts do I need to grab hold of? Where do I need to grow? The same with being a parenting. You know, to say I'm not good enough to be a parent, well, what are you good about? You know, maybe you have a natural love for kids, or maybe you have a natural structure, or maybe you have a natural understanding and nurturing side. That's already there, so you need to pick up some other skills. Or maybe you have those other skills. You know how to change diapers, and you know how to fix the food, but you have to work on being nurturing. The nice thing about that skill assessment is instead of being stuck in the I'm not good enough, it gives a place of here I'm already good enough and here's where I need to grow into. Not a stuck place, but a place to grow into. And that gives us a plan to grow. And that's the big thing. There is this idea that, you know, here we are, we're just kind of what we've got. And yet that's not what we see in any children, right? We watch children as they continually grow and grab new skills. A child doesn't say, you know, I don't think I'm good enough. I'm just a crawler. I'm not good enough to walk. They work on walking. And then once they've got that down, they say, you know, I don't think I'm good enough to go any faster than this. I think I'll just stick with the walking the rest of my life. No, they learn how to run. And that's the part that is just within us, to not be caught up in the I'm not good enough, but to say, how can I get to be good enough? How can I go to the next level? Now, there is a little danger looking behind the scene. There's a little thing that hides there, and that's perfectionism. Because the opposite of this can be perfectionism. If you create your plan to say, okay, I'm not good enough here, here, and here. So until I'm good enough, until I have this down perfectly, I don't think I'm going to go very far with this. I'm just going to notice that. And so our perfectionism can keep us stuck and can keep us from not truly growing. You know, we act like we're going to grow. We act like we have this plan, but the perfectionism keeps us locked in. I like the idea. I follow a lot of startup businesses, and they have this idea of the minimally viable product. Now, a startup, the lean startup movement is about how do you get started in business without having the top product, the last one in the whole field. And this really is modeled after how software has been developed. Think about how maybe if you use Word, you remember how Word used to be almost, well, it was a DOS program, right? Way back when it was a blinking little thing on a screen, it was a black screen. I remember those days. And I remember how it kept transforming. But it was a minimally viable product at each step. At each step, it had something that was useful, and so you could grab hold of that. And so to have a minimally viable product is to know that you have something that gives value, not the complete and final place, but there's always a new addition. There's always a new you right around the corner. And so then we start looking at what is your minimally viable skill set. It's the same equivalent for you. What is the minimally viable skill set you need to do something? And that's where you can really click into that idea of where is it I need to grow? What is it I need to do? How do I grab the steps that I don't have in place? And as I put those together, then I create my place of being minimally viable as a skill set. I can get started doing something. Now, it doesn't mean that once you've got the minimally viable, you're finished. You remember that Word had Word 1.0 and Word 2.0 and 2.5 and whatever other iterations that Word had and the Office had and that Windows has and that Macintosh has on theirs. And all of those operating systems and all the computer programs you see always are coming up with revised and updated programs. You can do the same to look for where you've got the bugs, to where you've got the places that need a fix. And that becomes your next minimally viable self. Your next minimally viable skill set, your next place to grow into. As you do that, you can give up the thought of I'm not good enough and say, where do I need to grow? Now, again, it's not going to stop you from having the thought. It just means that you don't have to commit to that thought. You don't have to believe that thought. You can find a new place to grow into. Okay, so let's go to thought number two that I think you need to drop. The second one is, it's not my fault. It's not my fault is one of those places where it's just an excuse to stay stuck. Now, recognize that that fault does not equal responsibility. That saying this person is at fault does not mean this person is responsible. You can be responsible without being at fault. In fact, what I find often happens is that when people are telling me it's not my fault, what they're really saying is I don't really want to take responsibility. I didn't cause this problem, so I'm not going to take action. And that's where it's not my fault ends up being a cop-out. Now, we learn that growing up, right? The dish breaks and you go, oh, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. And nothing changes about that glass. It's still broken. And the assigning of the blame does nothing to restore that. But to say, hey, you know what? I didn't break that, but I can get it cleaned up, is a much better understanding of that shift. When I was in college, I had a period of time when I volunteered with the Red Cross, and I wanted to do something to give back. And so what I discovered is they had a program that when somebody was burned out of their home or their apartment, the team would get on site and set up a trailer. And the trailer was designed to give water and food to the people who were displaced and also to the firefighters, and to start providing some basic living necessities. Find them a place to stay for that night. If it's a hotel, to give them a voucher. If it's a friend, to you know, kind of give them some extra supplies and maybe some gift certificates to restaurants and some things just to make it a little bit easier. And so what would happen is they would give us a call and say, hey, we've got a fire. Can you come? And so whenever I could, I was in college, so I had to run it around my homework and my classes. But whenever I could, I would pull on my boots and go. I kept my boots in the back of the car. And so I remember one night, it was late. I think it was about 12:30 at night, and there had been an apartment fire. And so I pulled on my boots, rushed off, met the people. Now, a lot of people had been pulled out of bed because the apartment fire that started in one apartment had spread and destroyed another four apartments in the process. And so there were displaced five different groups of people. And so in my area, I was working with a person that had been kind of the ground zero, the beginning point of that fire. And I remember talking with him, and he kept saying, it's not my fault. This is not my fault. And I said, okay, that's fine. I understand. And at that time, I just wanted him to calm down. I said, so tell me a little bit about what happened. He said, well, I really don't know. You know, it's not my fault. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about what you remember. And he said, well, you know, I think I fell asleep in bed. And then there was a fire. And I said, and where was the fire? And he said, well, my bed was on fire. And I said, oh, what do you think happened? And he said, well, I mean, I had a cigarette in my hand, but it's not my fault. And I said, so you think maybe the cigarette lit that? And he said, it's not my fault. You've got to understand, this is not my fault. And I said, well, tell me, what do you think happened? And he said, well, you know, I'm on this medication, and the medication makes me really, really drowsy. And I hadn't been on that medication, if they had not given me the medication, there's no way I would have fallen asleep with a cigarette in my hand. And besides, why do they even have these cigarettes that don't just go out when you're not puffing on them? That's crazy. That makes it a risky place. And besides that, why do they allow the sheets on your bed to burn? I mean, they ought to treat them with something to keep them from burning. They do that with kids' pajamas. Why don't they do that with the sheets and everything? And also, geez, this apartment is so cheap. It just went up in flames. It's like they didn't put anything into it, and everything was flammable. And on he went. And all he was doing was looking for who he could blame for the fact that the fire had happened when it was his lit cigarette on his bed that he had been smoking, where he fell asleep, that torched it. And I was sitting there thinking, wow, you're working so hard to talk about why it's not your fault that all you're doing is pointing back to yourself and pointing about how you don't want to be the person at fault. Nobody wants to be at fault. But at some point, we take responsibility. And so the reason we drop this belief, the reason we drop this thought, it's not my fault, is because it doesn't get us anywhere. It keeps us stuck. The better question is, how can I take responsibility? How can I move forward? How can I learn from what's happened and take responsibility? I use this analogy very often, that when you're in a building and the building's on fire, it is the wrong time to be standing around trying to figure out who to blame. It is a good time to say, I'm going to take responsibility to get everybody out of here. I'm going to take responsibility to do what I can. And when you do that, you make the shift. It's no longer about fault. It's about responsibility. Fault is about looking in the rearview mirror. Nothing changes back there. Responsibility is looking at where you're going to go from here. It's looking out the windshield and planning your trip. So drop that thought. It's going to pop in your head, but drop the thought, it's not my fault. And instead ask the question, how can I be responsible? How can I be able to respond to this differently? How can I take responsibility for something else happening going down forward? Which brings us to the third of the thoughts that I think we need to drop, and that is, life's not fair. I hear that so often. Life's not fair. Many times it's because life hasn't happened the way we want it to. Because I never hear people say, you know, life's not fair. I'm just the luckiest guy in the world. I'm just the luckiest person in the world. I have been so fortunate. Life is just not fair. It's weighted in my direction. And yet, that is the truth. The fact that we are here, the fact that you and I are in this conversation, is a miracle. The possibility of either one of us coming into existence in this place, in this time, now, is astronomically small. And then double that with the fact that you are listening to me now, and we are both on the very fortunate side of this. In fact, if you're able to listen to a podcast, If you have the technology to listen to a podcast, you are in the top levels of the world. You are in the fortunate part. If you're able to go to your closet in the morning and choose from a couple of pairs of shoes, maybe even more pairs of shoes, maybe lots of shoes, you're in the fortunate part. If you get up in the morning and you get the choice about your underwear, you're already in the fortunate part. If you don't go to bed hungry and starving, you're in the fortunate part. And that's the problem with this thought. It's always about how life's not fair to me. And when we get there, what does it do? It gives us an excuse to be stuck. Well, what do you expect me to do? Life's just not fair. We get stuck in that thought, and then we stop looking for the ways that we are fortunate, we are blessed, we are lucky. However you want to phrase that, however you want to think about that, that you and I, we are lucky. We are fortunate. You and I are on the winning edge of that. We have somehow rolled the craps, and they have come up in our winning number. And that's not just about as opposed to other people, but just period in existing and being able to be here. And see this fairness thing? It's always based on wishful thinking that I could have this, or if I had that, or if I was just at this level, if I just had this job or this income level or this car or this toy or this whatever, then life would be fair. But life being fair is about a grander piece. It's bigger than that. And whenever we get stuck in this thought, it's because we become egocentric, all about ourselves, not about where I am in the broader context, but where I think I ought to be, so that I am even more weighted in my favor. And that's why this keeps us so stuck. Life's not fair. That's true. But in a myopic sense, it's only not fair to you and you're on the losing side if you have not been able to step back and say, life's not fair. I'm winning here. I'm the fortunate part. I have been fortunate. Wherever that leads me, I have been fortunate. Life is not fair, and I'm winning it. And to be able to move in that broader view gives us a place to say, you know what? I am at a good place. I am fortunate. I can thrive no matter what life throws my way. That's the point of Thriveology, to be able to thrive and know you can grow and know you can take in the lessons and take responsibility for life no matter what life throws your way. Life is about the journey. It's not about anything else other than that journey. It's about taking responsibility, and it's about growing into being a person who impacts the world in positive ways. Give up those thoughts. Embrace the other possibilities of becoming good enough, of realizing that responsibility is the clue, and realizing how fortunate you are, that life's not fair, that you're on the winning edge. When you do that, you will be thriving. This is Lee Balcom wishing you a thriving life.
Listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at thriveology.com or at thriveologymagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled Thriveology. It's your life. Time to live it.